It's time for Mac Break Weekly with Jim Dalrymple, Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannocco. Lo and behold, big scoop for Mark Gurman. He says in March there's going to be a big Apple event with a brand new Apple Watch, brand new Macintoshes, maybe even a brand new iPhone. We'll ask Jim, yep, nope, next. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 484, recorded Tuesday, December 8th, 2015. Tear this music down. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website or cover page for your business, portfolio, or online store. Enter the offer code MacBreak and get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. And by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit Lynda.com/MacBreak. That's LYNDA.com/MacBreak. And by Braintree. Looking to set up payments for your business? Braintree gives your app or website a payment solution that accepts just about every payment method with one easy integration. Plus, Braintree will give you the first $50,000 in transactions fee-free. To learn more, visit BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. Andy Iannocco is here. He's naked under his clothing, but that's okay because he's from the Hayward Fire Department. We know how firemen look under there.
I did a podcast for someone from the Hayward Fire Department. Thank you. Thank you again for the hat. It is indeed one of my favorites.
It's good. It's good.
It's solid.
He also does a little reporting for the Chicago Sun-Times from time to time. And sous vide's his own turkey. So that's good. That's Renee Ritchie from Montreal.
How are you doing, Leo?
Good to see you once again, Mr. Ritchie.
Yeah, it's unseasonably warm here, so I don't know what to do with myself. It's like we're melting.
And formerly from Canada, but now from the South Bay, Mr. Jim Dalrymple of The Loop, loopinsight.com. You went inside today.
Yeah, I did. Try so I don't get strafed by those planes.
Yeah. It was also, it's a little rainy up here. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Apple. A battery is born. Apple's first iPhone battery, external battery. What do you guys think?
I like it.
Jim likes it.
I like it.
Why do you like it, Jimmy?
You know, I have really good luck with iPhone battery. I don't usually find myself in a situation where I'm out of battery, but there are those times when, you know, when I go to NAMM, the music show in LA every January, you know, you go all day, you're working all day, and then, you know, usually at night, you can plug in your phone. As long as it lasts the daytime, you're good. But there, you know, then it's time for dinner and, you know, going out afterwards and meeting all kinds of people. And your phone, it will run out regardless of how good your battery is. So having something like this, I mean, and huge hours on it, too.
Yeah.
Huge hours. So yeah. That's pretty good. I wish they had one for the Plus, though. But that's... You know,
Plus doesn't really need it. I think, you know, I mean,
well, I wouldn't mind having it anyway.
Yeah, it's time.
Yeah, I feel like some people are saying, why doesn't Apple just add extra battery to the iPhone? And I think they did. It's the iPhone 6 Plus.
Right.
You know, if you want it internal, you get the iPhone 6 Plus. If you want it external, like you don't want it all the time, but you want it there for the conferences, the shows, and you need it, you get this. I saw a lot of people on Twitter making fun of the Humpty Hump. And I can't stop saying Humpty Hump because it sounds great. But like almost like the Luke on Yoda's back. But if you look at the traditional cases, like if you look at the Mophies and things like that, everything is a compromise and everything is a decision. And I feel like Apple looked at those and said, well, they're two pieces and we kind of want one piece and they kind of interfere with cellular and we don't want to do that. And if we just make it a naked battery with a little bit of silicon over it, then what we can do is make a hinge in it so you can easily put it on and take it off without breaking it into two parts, and we can also leave the antenna exposed. We can put some passive antennas in here so it boosts the cellular signal and doesn't give you the same bar drops. And we can put like a full-on lightning port here so you can charge it at the same time as you charge the phone. And they sort of made a series of decisions that led it to having this sort of circa 2005 Trio extended battery hump on the back. But I think for some people, that's going to be a better choice.
I mean, yeah, and the other good thing is that if you have a dock or an accessory that's designed for the existing silicone case, it's the same profile, so it's supposed to use all those same things too.
Oh, so is this basically the silicone case with a hump?
With Yoda on his back, yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. I mean, you have to there's got to be a hump or a lump or a thickness, because the battery got to go somewhere.
Well, other people just smooth it over. They add
extra bulk.
They
make it a big over thing. Right.
Yeah. That's a different choice.
Yeah. Although Mophie also has more juice in theirs, I think. It's not clear because Apple is not revealing how many milliamp hours this thing has, which is...
I fix it. I'll do that.
Yeah. But just, you know, come on, Apple. Just tell people, okay? You tell people how many you're in the phone. Why wouldn't you tell people? But anyway, they say it about doubles, which means it's probably roughly the same size as a battery in the 6S. Which is what, 2,400 milliamp hours, something like that? 28, I can't remember.
Will you get one?
Me? I got one for my son. I have a 6S Plus. Plus, I've never run out of battery. I mean, situations like you and NAMM, which, by the way, is a very confusing thing to say. But when you're in NAMM and you go all day, or I go to CES and I go all day, which is the big difference between Dalrymple and me. He's going to NAMM and I'm just going to a consumer show. Is that you don't have the opportunity to plug it in. Travel's another big one for me. I'm going to get up in the morning. I'm going to be traveling. I want to be able to get off the plane and still have phone juice left.
There's no gold and no pink, though, Leo. It's so sad.
Man, just two colors. I'm surprised. There's a black, charcoal gray, pardon me, and a white.
Well, I got my son. Serenity showed me someone on Twitter did a pink version and did look like a bandage.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
I do like it that it's that soft silicone rubber that Apple uses in other places.
The phones need to be made more grippy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So and they're beautiful cases. I just love the way they snap.
It feels kind of ugly to me. I mean, but I never saw a beautiful battery case. So
I'm with Renee. I'm glad that I blogged about it this morning saying I'm glad that Apple made a very practical design choice, because time and time and time again this year we've been saying, my God, why didn't they put a clip on the pencil, and why did they put the charging port on the mouse there, and why did they make the Magic Keyboard just so stupidly thin? And I'm glad they just simply said the best solution for this is just to simply add a bump to it. And I know that Craig Hockenberry is going to say, I didn't even know that a battery case could get knocked up. Ho ho ha ha, Craig Hockenberry. But this is the right design choice for us right now.
Yeah,
it's only surprising they're getting into this market, because they've always seemed to be happy enough to leave this to third parties. But either this is just a product they wanted to design, and sometimes that it's that simple, or they just realize how much money they're leaving on the table by not making this accessory.
You get an advantage too, because it's an Apple product. You'll see the batteries,
double battery indicators, and you know that's not going to explode on the charger like some of the things you buy on eBay.
And also, because they took some of the battery out, the battery is smaller because they put the Taptic engine on the iPhone 6S, and it's not as big as the iPhone 6S Plus to begin with.
Yeah,
some people have been complaining about battery life, and this is a nice way to get the money off the table for the battery thing.
Right.
And also because Apple's such a high-profile brand and they have that sort of level of integration, they can offer something that's, well, I'm worried about the battery life. Well, just get this battery case right here.
Right.
So it sort of solves a lot of problems for them.
Yeah. I like the idea that you can kind of peel off the top because it's soft silicone rubber.
Yeah.
You don't have to snap something together.
I lose the snap-on parts for every time.
Absolutely. I lose them and I break them. I mean, the reason why I always travel with something like this instead of a case is because I don't like having to. It seems as though you're kind of stuck keeping it there forever because it's so much trouble to get it in and out of the case. And I just like to be able to have this as slim a phone as I can possibly have in the case that I want to carry it around in, whatever that case may be. And this will also let me charge my iPad and other things like that. But
right.
I'm glad that Apple's deciding to bring their own design consideration to what, for many people like Jim, is an essential accessory.
Yeah, and if you're price sensitive, you should absolutely shop around. There are much lower costs.
They're always aware that there are third-party solutions out there, so they're not forcing you to spend $100 on a phone case.
Here's something that I didn't know, but I think thanks to Serenity, I know now, which is I assumed that the earphone jack on this was electronic, that it was connected via lightning. But in fact, it's just a hole, right? It just goes through into the phone body.
haven't seen it yet.
Well, somebody pointed out that you're going to need an extender. While it will fit Apple's headphones, because, of course, Apple knew, there are some third-party headphones, including Beats headphones, that won't fit in that hole. I thought it was Serenity.
Has anybody seen one of the – have they shown any pictures of it outside of the case? Because it would seem as though they would just put a pass-through in that, there.
It's not so – yeah, I get – well, okay, let me – I'll try to find
it. The Mophie is just a hole, and it ships with an extender. I used to get extenders with the Mophies.
Yeah. I can't imagine Apple would want to go back to the you need a dongle for the headphones thing they did with the first iPhone.
Well,
I'd like to recycle all those jokes all over again because I'm very lazy, but I don't think that they would do that.
Mm.
And it also, like to Andy's point, it works with all the connectors, and it also works with the brand new iPhone compatible SD card reader.
Yeah. The silicone case comes in different colors. I'm surprised that they didn't just, you know, it'd be nice to have a product red. Maybe they're. Here we go. Here's a video. Is this Apple's video? No. Wouldn't have an ad on it. This is somebody else's.
Okay, so this is Verge.
The Voyage.
Voyage hands-on.
The Voyage.
Can you see that? Yeah, so it doesn't look like it's sticking anything in there, so I bet it's just a hole.
It looks like it's just a hole. You know, and so whoever wrote this, I thought it was Serenity, maybe it was Christina Warren, maybe it was somebody from The Verge, said that she could put her Apple headphones in there, but her Beats headphones were too thick and would need an extender.
Or a drill bit.
FYI.
Womp womp.
Or a drill bit.
Yeah. Lauren Good.
Isn't it interesting? This is the second device that's not coming in like a range of colors. Like I was surprised that the iPad Pro cases and stuff that's only available in gray. Are they getting more conservative in their ranges before they figure out what people actually want?
I would guess that they want you all to buy black and white, and then when the red one comes out, buy that too.
Black is always the most popular color. Like most people almost always just buy black. It's a little black dress or the little black shirt, and then like you add more colors depending on what you think the product mix is going to be. But this stuff is a little more expensive. Dress? Jim, come on, secrets, Canadians. You start off conservatively because it's almost inexpensive to make a silicone case, but when you start adding battery or keyboards or things like that to it, then, or over their niche products, it probably amps up the expense, especially when you're doing tons of them at once.
I can't believe we just spent 10 minutes talking about
it. I can't believe that Apple's launching a product in December.
There's just not much other Apple news today. I mean, God, how are we going to fill this time?
A new Apple product is like Christmas, my friends.
But they're releasing products late in December, which makes advent calendars cry. And they're releasing so many products this year.
Right.
We were trying to do a quick count of it, and it's just so much. Do you remember a couple of years ago, Apple hasn't released anything, and it's June by now, doomed. And then this year, it's almost like revenge for that.
Well, it also raises an interesting. Okay, so the lightning is a physical connector.
There you go. It's showing it just right in there.
Yeah. But the headphone is just a hole.
That's the Mophie.
There's the Mophie. You know. So there's one other thing to make note of. The default Mophie gives you a choice of whether you're charging the phone in the Mophie or just the Mophie. This one, you're charging the phone and the case, but it keeps the phone at 100% if the case runs down. So you can always, and I think this is the way I use the Mophie, but it's not necessarily default. If you remove the case, you're guaranteed your phone is at 100%. Whatever. So the case drains first, I guess is what I'm saying. The Mophie you can choose. And so when you charge... If you have enough juice, it'll charge the battery, which then charges...
Leave it charges the phone first and then
phone
the case.
First. Okay. There's no switch, so... There's no...
It's going to be interesting to see the teardown, just to see what kind of antennas are there, how many controllers are there.
And
those teardowns make me sad.
Well, he has one less case in the world. That's true.
they don't make me
as sad as Will It Blend. That makes me sad.
That makes me sad, too, yeah.
That's when I cry. Take a perfectly good iPhone and turn it into carbon dust. And then there's a little port so that the sound... Because the speakers on the iPhone are in the bottom on the 6, right? Aren't they? The speakers on the bottom on my 6S Plus. So
yeah, they've got an acoustic chamber or something.
They have something because there's a little. I noticed there's a little port. Well, maybe that's for the mic. I don't know. Anyway,
so many products.
You have many choices in the world. Well, I do want to talk a little bit about products and Apple's kind of proliferation of products. Remember when, and we'll do this in a second. When Steve Jobs came back to Apple, he drew the famous quadrant, the plus sign, and said, four categories: pro, consumer, desktop, portable. That's it. We're killing everything else. They've gone kind of the other way. There's a lot of SKUs. We'll talk about that in just a bit. Jim Dalrymple is here. He's no longer sad. He's cheered up. he's feeling better, I hope.
I feel good.
It would now.
Well, this is the season that little kids come rushing up to him, all happy and laughing for toys. So if he's got a hook on his face,
it's death metal.
He can really
Santa.
Damage some kids.
Mommy, Santa's a Bruins fan.
Death metal Santa, I love him. Mommy, why is Santa Claus drinking a Heineken?
Death metal Santa, that's a good movie.
Also, Rene Ritchie, who's just the happy Santa. He's the martial arts Santa from iMore.com. Jim's from The Loop, loopinsight.com. And, of course, from the Chicago Sun-Times, Andy Iannacco.
I'm the Scrooge Santa.
He's Scrooge Santa.
I'm big.
I'm pretty. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. You know, I was just thinking a good Christmas gift would be, you're a geek, you have a friend who needs a website, set up a Squarespace site for them and gift it to them. Wouldn't that be a kind of a nice gift? Squarespace is where leoville.com, my blog, lives. It looks good, I got to say. Whether you need a simple cover page or you're a photographer or artist and you need a portfolio, maybe you want a blog for your business or for yourself, an online store. I use it in my personal blog. I just love it. But it's kind of professional, too, because I use the cover page feature. So if you just go to leoville.com, you just see the cover page and a slideshow of images that you can dig deeper in. I got a calendar in there and all this stuff. Sites look, yeah, there it is. I just love that. I'm just really happy with Squarespace. I put it off for a long time, and I'm sorry I did. Sites look professional. You don't need to be a site designer. I did it all with point and click. No coding required. Of course, if you want to get geeky, there are plenty of customizable settings. See, you can even put an animated GIF in there, which I like. Fonts, colors, page configurations. There's my photo portfolio, which I like. And, you know, I can use the portfolio app on my iPad with my photo portfolio. If you're a photographer, you set up the web page, but the portfolio app lets you go to a bride or a client and say, here's your images. It's really great. All their sites work great on a full-size 27-inch screen or on mobile. That means they're what they call responsive. There's my Audible reading list. It's the last thing I posted up there. So your websites look great on any size device. Don't judge me on my design, though, because I decided to go really simple, really clean, but you can get as fancy as you want. I love Squarespace. Pricing's simple, too. You can get a free custom domain with an annual purchase. So if you need, you know, my site, mygreatsite.com, you can get it. Power your business with Squarespace Commerce. Commerce available in all their templates. It's the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your store so that it looks as good as your business. You know, that it has the look and feel of your business. And they have a basic plan or an advanced plan so your business can grow as you need more. Plus, they have incredible 24/7 customer support. So if you're a restaurant, a musician, are you getting married? Squarespace is for you. And what a great gift. You can go to squarespace.com, click get started. You can set up a site for somebody for nothing and then gift it to them. You've paid nothing. Well, you put your time in, you design something. It's, you know what? It's kind of like a handmade gift. It's great. Start your free trial with no credit card required. Squarespace.com. Make sure you use the promo code MacBreak. When you sign up, you get 10% off. And, of course, show your support for the show. Squarespace, I didn't use MacBreak when I signed up, so could you just... what the heck? You do it, would you? Squarespace.com. Offer code MacBreak to get 10% off. We're talking Apple. You using an F and done? Jason Klanthus, you use Squarespace too? Yeah. We'll use you next time. We'll try to, because it's fun, because I like to try to bring sites down. Of course, you can't with Squarespace. Ford Sync car owners, this is really good news. They're going to get Apple Siri Eyes free. This is an update to existing Sync owners. I didn't even know you could do that. Ford announced this. It's called a Siri Eyes free update. That means Sync vehicles dating back to 2011. That's more than 5 million cars. As soon as you get in the car with your iPhone, you can start using Siri to make and receive phone calls, listen to music, get driving directions, check calendar appointments via voice commands. I'm sad I traded in my Mustang now. That's really nice. I didn't even know you could do that. This is kind of an interesting. The update is tricky, depending on which Ford you have. You might have to download it inside, put it on a USB drive, and then plug it into your car. I guess it's not that tricky.
Are those for the ones that do run the Microsoft embedded or that don't run the Microsoft?
They do, embedded? Right? They do? Sync is based on Microsoft Car.
I thought they were moving off of.
They are. Okay. In fact, they're going to do CarPlay at some point, but this is pre-CarPlay. This goes back 4 years.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it reflects Apple's pre-CarPlay strategy.
Oh, yeah?
Before didn't they announce yep. The Siri component way before CarPlay?
Oh, interesting. This is the My Ford Touch vehicles. Oh, okay. So this is not a new thing then, Andy. This is just
right.
Ford doing something that others have. Are other manufacturers doing this already?
Yeah, there's just been a limited number of cars that have supported that one feature. It's kind of old school stuff. There was a time when there were so many half-arsed versions of Android compatibility and Siri and Apple compatibility. It wasn't until Android for the car and Apple and iOS for the car came out that they finally had a real strategy for actually APIs and broadcasting stuff to the stuff. It was almost all hardware before that.
Cool. Actually, it kind of backs up this other story about Apple Maps. Apparently, it is completely dominant now. Of course, it's the default on an iPhone. So, yeah.
So is Apple Music, though. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it may be that people would choose Google if
it's built in and free.
Yeah. And Siri does it automatically. And also
remember that anytime someone makes a request that requires a map, by default, it goes to Apple Maps. So,
right. All right, never mind.
Which is not to say that Apple Maps hasn't made incredible jumps in the past year alone.
Yeah.
But before anybody's waving a flag, saying, you see, we've brought the beast of Google Maps to its knees.
Yeah.
Like, no, you haven't. You just put a hamburger stand like closer to someone's house than the really, really good restaurants that are off the highway.
Yeah.
You made it unmaddening enough that people no longer just avoid it.
Exactly. instead, all you had to do was turn it from a poke in the eye with a sharp stick to a poke in the eye with a blunt stick, and that's all you need to do.
I'm drunk. I'm using Apple Maps.
Mr. Frederick, if you want to use that as the title slide for the next, by all means, a poke in the eye with a blunt stick.
Blunt eye trauma.
It's an improvement.
Apple. I thought Apple Maps for me it worked from the very beginning. I mean, there was some funky map imagery and things like that, but actual maps worked pretty well for me right from the start. And
it really depended where you are. Of course, you're in Silicon Valley, it's going to work really well.
Two things for me is that it didn't have as good, if I typed something in that was at all fuzzy, it couldn't resolve it the way Google Maps did. Like, it couldn't do search widening and spelling mistakes and nearest neighbor anywhere nearly as well as Google. And then it could take me to the block where the thing is, but it wasn't as good at showing exactly where the entrance was and where it was in a structure. So it could get me most of the way there. But then at some point, Google, at least where I live, took out street names and would just give you, took out exit numbers and would just give you street names. And in Quebec, that's non-functional because every exit has like 19 different streets associated with it. So I went back to using Apple Maps, and it's been good enough that I don't think I've even downloaded Google Maps on the iPhone.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they're all terrible. I mean, we were driving back from Ottawa, me and a friend of mine, and I was using Apple Maps and he was using Google Maps, and neither of them knew when there was spontaneous construction.
Yeah.
And Google told me to do a U-turn over a bridge, and Apple Maps told me to go the wrong way. And it was just, I'm just looking at this going, but we're in the future, fellas. Come on.
Yeah. That's hard. It's really hard to do. What they're
doing. It's a hard job.
Is very difficult, and things change fast. And they've redone the whole Golden Gate Bridge approach in San Francisco. And I tried a couple of different maps to see who was up to date. And fortunately, it's funny, my car was most up to date because it uses Google Earth for its map input. And so it had actual pictures of the way it was supposed to look, but I've also gone off-roading on Google.
Yeah, that's fun. I didn't care about burning the bandwidth on my phone when I moved back down here, because the exit off the highway to get here was like an exit that they just finished building like a year or something earlier, and I just enjoy just like plowing through trees and people's backyards on my phone.
Yeah.
I just enjoy that every single time.
So fun. I know how you.
The worst part is how helpless. Like I was driving and I saw them closing a street. So, you know, fair enough. The Maps app don't know it yet, but I had to not use that entrance. But then every single Map app just wanted me to circle the block going back to that entrance over and over again. And I tried going further out. They wanted, and like I was helpless. I had no idea where I was anymore. I've no longer got anything but these Maps apps.
That's why you go to Waze. I mean, it's just spot on every single time.
Because it's crowdsourced, right?
It's crowdsourced, based both immediately people saying, hey, I can't take that exit, or there's a crash right here. And also people who, after working with the Map Creator app, they develop a reputation. The algorithm says, if this person right here, right now, today, is telling us that this exit is going to be closed for the next 2 weeks, let's assume that this exit is closed for the next 2 weeks. Yeah. And so the updates just happen just immediately.
What's the status of Apple Maps in public transport? They're slowly adding that, right?
I don't think they've announced any new cities, though, have they?
Not in a while.
Yeah, it really is coming. Every single city has a big announcement. They just added Boston fairly recently. The directions are okay, but I expect it to get better. Really, the thing to understand is that whenever you look at something like Google Maps, you're seeing 15 years worth of experience. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is just in observing how people are using the app and thinking, oh, we had no idea that people were going to use it this way. Let's make that easier. Apple shouldn't be dinged when they roll out a new feature like public transit, and it doesn't work quite as well as something that Google Maps does. Google Maps is usually pretty brilliant at figuring out that the easiest way to get there by public transit. There's also a third party apps that will also include Uber in that, and say City Mapper. I shouldn't mention names. So I keep getting these two apps confused whenever I think about them. But there's one that's just so good, it will say, well, here's how you would get it if you get a Zipcar, because there's a Zipcar lot just two blocks away from you right now. If you don't mind walking a half a mile, you can go here. One of these companies is going to get bought by somebody, and that's going to make it the default app for a lot of users.
One of the issues, I think, is that that city governments, in some cases, decided, oh, we're going to hold on to this information which, frankly, belongs to the public. We're going to hold on to this information and make money by licensing it, or make our own app, and that's really
fiefdoms. That's why China, there's 300 Chinese cities, because they have a central authority that governs the usage of all of them, and a central repository that has all the data in the same format, where almost every other country, it's every single municipal fiefdom has their own ownership of it and format for it and way that they will and will not let it be used.
Yeah, that's a shame. I think it's City Mapper that really does a great job. I use that in London. Yeah. And as you say, Andy,
yeah.
It's fantastic. It'll tell you how to get anywhere four different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I'm amazed at how it's some of this seems so simple too. Really, all I want is whenever I go into the city, I'm always starting from this commuter rail station. I'm always getting off at Back Bay Station. I just need this app to say, okay, if he's not within 20 miles of Back Bay Station, I bet he's home. So I'm going to tell him, anytime he taps this button, I'm going to tell him when the next train to Back Bay is. And anytime I'm in the city, oh, well, he's not close to home, I'm going to tell him when the next train home is. Yeah. And it seems to me like an obvious thing, but people who look at millions of commuters instead of just me have a different attitude about it. I'm still angry that the MBTA commuter rail app, every single time I have to punch in the name of the station and then tell it it's a weekday, and then yes, I want to go inbound, and every single time I'm thinking, this is stuff. There are sensors on this computer. This isn't a PDF. You should be able to figure this out.
That really is. Do you use Jim? As much as you like Apple Maps, you'll use something like City Mapper if you're somewhere.
If I'm somewhere like in England and things like that, yeah. But the majority of the time, I'll tell you, I use Apple Maps.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's there. I find it very accurate and it gives me good directions. And, you know, usually, depending on where you're going, it'll give you two or three different routes. And, you know, you pick the one that's best and away you go.
I do like its integration into the watch, too. Does Google Maps do that? I can't, on the watch?
It alerts, but it's not the same level.
It's not. Yeah. So you it buzzes you and it says turn left. I mean, it's really
integrating
nice.
With the Maps app, not just with the notification system.
But that's where Apple kind of excels at things, you know, is that level of integration where, you know, you can do things from your watch or from your phone, and, you know, it kind of it integrates back and forth between the two. That's really great.
Actually, I do want to talk about in a little bit the Above Avalon post, Dan's post about the grand unified theory of Apple products, because that links into this, and I'm sure you guys have an opinion. We talked on the Sunday about it on Twit with Jason Snell, and I'm just curious. I'm sure you've read it. But as long as we're talking about the watch, is Mark Gurman right? A simple yep or nope will do. Apple plans March Apple Watch 2 event with a possible 4-inch iPhone 6C.
And Max.
And Max. Did he mention Max too? Wow. Would this be, is this be, could this be? It was at last year's March event that Apple announced my favorite Mac today, which is the MacBook, that 12-inch MacBook.
Yeah, mine too.
Love that.
I'm just happy they're doing spring events again. Put a second port on that thing.
You don't need a second port. Type-C is everything you need.
It'd be nice to have.
I don't need it. I mean, the MacBook is my favorite Mac.
I thought I would need it, and then you realize I never connect anything. If I do, I got a dongle, but
yeah,
I do it so rarely that
I never need a second port. What I do need is a much more powerful processor, so I go back to the Mac Pro for that kind of stuff.
Maybe that's what we'll see in March.
Because the Intel Broadwell-Y, it still makes me cry sometimes.
Is there a suitable Skylake part from Intel that would make the MacBook sing?
I think they have an analog to the Broadwell. It's what do they call it? Core M, I think, is the product.
Yeah.
Name. Yeah, so there'll be a Skylake one. But, I mean, it's a hard job. They're, as much as Apple is trying to bring the A9X up to sort of iPad Pro power levels, Intel's trying to push the laptop things down to ultimate portable levels. And both those things are really hard to do.
Yep, Skylake for laptops has a faster Core M with faster RAM. I think that would be, March would be an excellent time to announce that, Apple.
Yeah, I'd like a hefty.
But what about Apple Watch 2. What about that? Is that credible?
Don't know. I mean, they have. Are they done? Has it gelled yet? Are they done?
Too soon, Apple. I'm just going to say it right now.
I don't know if it's too soon. They have to really come up with something dynamic in how it tracks health. So if they came up with a really good sensor, if they had came up with a way to improve the hardware so that it could do blood pressure readings, without making the watch band into an inflatable cuff, that would be absolutely amazing.
It's hard to think of what you could do to make this
an S2 computer on a chip. I think would be nice, just because there's still like the app store is still really hard. I think even Apple doesn't really know what apps on a watch means yet, let alone developers.
Well, you're right with watchOS 2. I thought apps are going to just pop up and they still go spin.
No, it's still hugely resource. It's hugely power and performance constrained because it's a tiny, tiny little thing. And looking at this, I mean, people say Apple just wants thinness. They're willing to go thick if they need to fit stuff into it. I mean, that thing is just chock full of processor and battery as much as they could spare, and it's not enough. And maybe an S2 computer on a chip would improve performance. But I'd rather see there's a lot of ideas in the original watch that, like, is a communications thing. Like, I don't get those anymore. I like the sketches. I never get them anymore. So is that really what people want to do on their watch? Are the apps the way they are now, the analog to iPhone apps? Is that really what people want to do? So I could see better hardware, because Apple can always make better hardware. The march of technology always goes forward. They always have better chipsets, always have slightly better tricks to get more out of battery life. As long as I can keep using my bands, because I think, honestly, the bands, and now I have a bigger investment in those than the stupid case. So I'd be happy just to swap.
That's a good point. You don't care. You're Mr. Band Man.
Well, I mean, that would be harder if I had to rebuy those bands. Ouch. If I could just get a new case and use it with those bands, that greatly lowers the impact on me. So I could absolutely see that. But watchOS 3, I think, to me, is a much bigger question than watch hardware too.
Well, and I think we need to really decide what it is we want the watch to do. And I don't think a lot of people really know that yet. For me, the watch works well as it is because I use it for fitness tracking and, directions and music. I use Siri a lot on my watch. And, you know, to me, that works really well. I don't know if I would really use full-fledged apps on my watch. You know, I don't even use glances that much, to be honest.
Yeah.
So
go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's a lot of things that I do on my watch, and the way that it integrates with the iPhone is perfectly fine with me. I haven't seen or heard of, a killer app that would make me say, okay, this is going to be so great that, it can be a full app on its own.
Excel, just like the early days of Mac.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm looking more forward to watchOS 3. And I'm looking forward to seeing Apple was in a real jam with the first, or not jam, I'm sorry. They didn't have the same opportunities they had with a watch that they had with the iPad and with notebooks and with the phones. They don't have the ability to observe other people who had made even successful products and seeing, well, here's how people are using these things. Here's the things they're complaining about this, the BlackBerry phone. Here's things that we can fix. And here's how we can carve out our own space. They really had to say, no, there is no such example of a really successful smartwatch before. So it's down to what do we think should work? And I think that that leads to a design where they have to put out a lot of ideas that they personally believe in very strongly, but they're not going to know whether people are taking them up until they get information back. They watch people and see what people are using. Just like Renee said, I can't remember the last time that I even heard of somebody sending sketches. The send your heartbeat thing is a very beautiful demo, and it doesn't get in the way if you don't use it, but I don't see people using that. Glimpses never really worked for me very well. I don't know what the Glimpse is, and the Glimpse is never there when I need it. I mean, I've switched back now that my SIM is in my my Nexus 5, so now I'm back to using Android Wear full time, and I'm just remembering over the past like just 4 days that isn't it great when you just turn your wrist and there's the information that you want right now that you turn your watch to get right there. I had a meeting at 3 p.m. yesterday. That's why I was in town, and a half hour before the meeting, I'm saying, well, I should probably start walking there. I think I'm about five blocks away. And literally, as I turn my watch, because I'm about to like do a Google search or whatever, as soon as I turn my watch, a new card arrived with, here's your appointment. It's 30 minutes away. Here is the address. Tap this button to get onto Google Maps. And I'm like, that's all I want. That think ahead for me. And not, I'm not suggesting that that's exactly the way all watches should do it, but it's an example of one successful way to do it. And I think that Apple's going to be refining their view of who's using it and how they're what's really speaking to them about the watch.
I get that. For like, I made a dinner reservation the other day, and all of a sudden, in both the Siri search page and my watch, a thing came up saying traffic is dense, leave earlier. It's just I don't get them consistently the way that I get the way that they work on Google now, and I don't know what's causing that. But that stuff is all there. It just needs to be acted on better, I think.
I'm kind of worried, although I guess there's a benefit to it, that we're really rapidly entering a world where you pick a side. If you're Google, you have to be all Google. And you'll have a Pixel C, you'll have an Android Wear watch, you'll have a Nexus, you'll have, I don't know if you'll have a Chromebook, but everything else will be Google. If you're Apple, it's just really, you're not going to use it. You can't use Android Wear very well. I mean, you can use it, but not very well. You've got to pick a side now. And
you can use Google anywhere, though, can't you?
It's gotten less and less cooperative. And I see Google kind of – I feel like Google's now more and more a second-class citizen on iOS.
Not to go on a tangent, but can you imagine a world where Google decided they didn't need to compete in smartphones and they just concentrated fully on making that Star Trek system in the cloud and for every device? And just there was just fabulous, incredible Google services on Windows and on iOS and no competing hardware devices. That would be a fascinating world to live in.
Yeah.
Well, are they doing that now? The only really weird thing they're doing is shutting out Windows Phone. Which I still don't know exactly. It seems as though if they were really committed to all of our software everywhere, we don't care where you're doing it, it would say, yeah, you're going to have to start writing some Windows Phone apps.
The only company that's really cross-platform at this point, ironically, is Microsoft.
Yeah. they're non-Microsoft first, Office. Quite often.
Yeah.
It's bad to talk about companies as though they're people and that they're doing things for the good of this or because they're fascinated by that necessarily. They run the business that they're capable of running. And Microsoft realized that now that there's so much diversity and now that their mobile has taken over, they can't get by on selling desktop operating systems and desktop based software anymore. So now they're shifting. And the reason why that they make the best cross-platform, I can't think of a better cross-platform app right now than Office, the entire suite from edge to edge. And the reason why they're doing that is because that's the business that they feel as though they have to be in, just like Google is in the business they have to be in, which is a web-based service that will deploy pretty much everywhere, and Apple's in the business they are in, which is to justify really well-made, really fine-crafted, really expensive pieces of hardware.
I can't imagine how painful it was for me when people have been asking me, well, now that Dropbox is killing Mailbox,
What do you recommend as an alternative in iOS? And I say, Mike, believe it or not, Microsoft Exchange. Outlook.
Yeah. I switched to an Exchange server, and I'm really happy with it about 2 months ago.
Really? You use an Exchange server?
Because I was on, you need to do an audit.
You use like a third party,
I subscribe to Office 365 Exchange Mail, $8 for my mailbox.
Oh,
and it's unlimited storage. The apps are all free, and they're really wonderful apps. I feel as though they're much better than the Mail. I have not even configured the Mail app on my iPad Pro because the Outlook app is just so much better than what I've been experiencing in Mail in other apps. Backups, support, it hooks up to everything else really, really well. I mean, the reason why I didn't even think about switching my Mail to Exchange was that I'm not a business. I'm not as, and it must be, I can't pay $100 a seat per month for whatever, but no, it's $8.
I didn't even know about this. So, okay.
go to Office
I'm an Office 365 subscriber, so I can add for $8 a month. I can add email basically.
Do I get
an Outlook address?
You can get you can attach your own domain to it. It's a separate thing from a regular Office 365 subscription, I believe. It will integrate into your Office 365, but I don't know what the sales domain is, but I think it's something like, you know, exchange.com. And I was on the same email provider for about 12 years, and they were charging me $12 a month for like a limited like 1 gigabyte of storage and whole bunch of stuff that didn't really work. And now for less money than that, I've got something that is up all the time, and I don't have to keep cleaning up my mailbox every 2 weeks and all this other sort of, and all this great free software. So I'm,
you know, I think Microsoft has done an incredible job on their iPhone, on iPad apps.
Absolutely.
For Office. Just they've done a tremendous job on those apps. But I tried Outlook a little while ago, maybe 4 or 5 months ago, on the Mac, and I just thought it was awful.
Oh no, the desktop app is terrible. No, the desktop. Yeah. Everybody knows that.
what they've done on.
I don't think Andy's recommending Outlook for Mac.
It's great.
Well, I've been using the web app.
Oh yeah, okay, absolutely. All right.
Can you use
Mail, Apple's Mail with
Yep. Nope. Yeah. Mail contacts, everything is has Exchange support, so. Even if you just want to use it as a mail provider and still use all of your standard like stock Apple apps, it will work just fine.
One thing.
So
for me,
what happened to the Mac? What happened to the Mac apps? Why are they so bad?
Oh, they're still tied to the old Office, I think. You know, Outlook was a horrific program.
It's revenge for iTunes on Windows, Jim.
That's what's confusing, because Outlook for iOS is not Outlook. It's accompli.
It's accompli. Yeah, absolutely.
So
the thing that I like about this too is, like, to Andy's point, a friend of mine was all upset that Mailbox is going away. And to me, I will never use an app that is not core to a company's business, because I don't ever want to care about an app that I'm using more than the company makes it.
But it was a great app, and then Dropbox bought it. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, did you wait?
Absolutely. But I want to go to Microsoft because they care desperately. It's like, I don't really use Inbox because I feel like if I want to use Gmail, I use Gmail. I don't use Inbox. I feel like that's some kind of the thing that Google will just take away one day. And then I'll be all upset about it. So I'd rather just use a company that's focused on making that product awesome. And that's their primary business. And I think like Outlook is like that, and Gmail is like that.
I'm sorry, I keep going back to this. So Andy, I already have an Office 365 subscription. And then now I have Home. I don't have Business. Do I need Business? Because I could just, I mean, I have an Outlook address.
Try going to Outlook.com.
Okay.
I think that's it confused me as well, because there's Office 365 and then there's Outlook.com.
Right. Outlook.com is their mail program, which I do have an account. I mean, I have an address there. As you can see, it's basically filled with Microsoft spam.
That's just like the free email address that you get with whatever you do.
Right.
This is like actually hosted Exchange.
I got to check that out. You know what? I'll just ask Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley tomorrow, Windows Weekly.
Yeah, it was between, I can't remember the other one, but there's another really nicely, I'm sorry they can't come up with that. I'd have to open up my Evernote. But there's another super, super popular like third-party mail hosting system that's been around for years and years and years.
I've been using Fastmail and IMAP, but
I think it was Fastmail.
Yeah, I love Fastmail.
It was really a coin toss, and the thing that I could have gone either way and would flip the coin was, number one, I'd never used Exchange before. And I thought it would be a good learning experience for people, because I have no experience with it. And also, One of the most intense email users that I know is my friend Dave Nanian, who does Super Duper, the backup utility, and he does all of his customer service emails personally, and it's always people who are saying, I downloaded your free app and I can't figure out how to back up my thing. And he's been on vacation and keeping up with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails a day, and he uses Exchange as his hosted mail service. And I thought, well, if he's not only a consistent email wherever he is, but if him having to process intensely that volume of email every day, and he's happy with Exchange, I'm going to at least give it a try, and I've been very happy with it.
I'm going to try it. I just found it, so it's a little bit. It's thanks to the chat room. It is a business product. It's $4 per user per month Exchange Online, so it's basically hosted email.
Yep. $4? I got ripped off. I think I
must have two addresses. Picture. Yeah. No, I don't want to talk to a Microsoft specialist. I'm busy right now.
It's kind of sad, though, that like there's like stupid like game services and movie services that I pay more for a month than the backbone of my entire business, which is my inbox.
Well, I'm mostly looking for just a better way to handle it. Email is such Gmail and Fastmail. Oh my God.
That pop-up you got, like, I was trying to upgrade my internet and something else the other day, and it wouldn't let me do it online. I had to talk to a representative.
Sorry.
And I found out why. It's because they want to upsell. And if I just buy something, there's no upsell.
Of course. Try you don't know. You don't know in Canada. You don't know Comcast. Try to do anything at Comcast. Oh, my God.
One thing I'd like to say, because I know that people are listening, the good thing about signing up for this is that you can – if you've already – I already had a self-hosted domain – for my email, so So when you first sign up, they will give you like a Josh Schmenge .outlook.whatever. Big Bang Path through the Microsoft service. So you can keep the brand new email address. Don't give it out to any people, but use it to basically shake down the service. For the first week, I couldn't send email because it was a new virtualized mail server, and it took a couple of days before the other mail systems to trust it as not a source of spam. It took another couple of days for another thing to shake out. It learns. It has a great feature called Clutter, where it watches which emails. Not only does it process junk, and it processes it very well, but it will also, it notices that like eBay shipping notifications and like Amazon shipping notifications, they're not junk mail, but I notice that Andy doesn't tend to open these. So I'm going to periodically take that stuff that I know that he doesn't look at. I'm just going to move it into the clutter box so that's not deleted. It's still there, but it won't be taking up his attention in the inbox. And it takes a while for it to learn that sort of stuff. So after a couple of weeks, when all of the disasters that could happen have stopped, that's when I finally switched over my MX records to the new Outlook inbox, and it's like I said, I've been very happy with it.
I agree, it's very good.
You use it too, Jim?
I did use it. I used it for, and then I switched phones, and it was just a matter of getting set up quickly, and then I didn't set it up.
Yeah. What do you guys recommend? Since Dropbox is dumping Mailbox, and by the way, as somebody Proteus says in the chat room, Dropbox was looking ahead. They hinted they believe email is dead and there are better solutions.
Slack.
Messaging, like Slack, messaging-based solutions. But email may be dead, but I'm still getting an awful lot of it. It's the old Johnny Carson joke. When you die, your hair and fingernails continue to grow, but email tends to drop off. But I feel like for now, I need a good email server and a good email client on iOS. I bet you, I'm going to guess you guys just use Apple's own mail client. But what do you use, Jim?
Oh, I use Apple Mail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. On iOS as well.
Oh, yeah.
How about you, Renee?
Yeah, I use Mail.app primarily because I have Apple Mail, Google Mail, and a couple other email accounts, and it gives me an integrated inbox for all of that. Like, the unified inbox is just the best way my brain knows how to keep track of mail.
Right. Yeah, me too.
And how about you, Andy?
I do have Apple Mail. I do keep it for unified inbox. I am looking for other solutions that I know that I believe might be as good, but I haven't tried them yet. But when it comes to – I already have a system that puts everything that I need to know about into a special address And that's what I mostly spend my time looking at. Outlook is good for that sort of stuff. But I'm not saying that the mail app is useless. On the desktop, it's what I'm used to. It does work very, very effectively. And it's been a couple of years since it's screwed up on me or made me think that I was archiving 10,000 messages when it was actually deleting them from the server. As I watched and screamed in horror. Yeah. So it's not terrible. I do think that the iOS apps that Microsoft provides for Outlook are much better. There's just so many more features that I like. Just the ability to, all the times that I've had to say to myself, oh, that's a really good email, but I'm standing on a platform waiting for a train. I need 5 seconds of clear thought. I will schedule this to be reminded of this, to reply to it in 4 hours' time. And it's just easier just to triage my mailbox that way. It's stuff that mail app on iOS could do but doesn't yet. So there's hope.
Well, Apple does that with a lot of its apps, though. I mean, it makes a basic functional app with sometimes some advanced features, but they leave a lot of room for third parties to come out with new ideas and new ways to do things. And I think that's good. It's good for Apple do that. I mean, Calendar is a perfect example of that because you have Fantastic Calendar. You have other calendaring apps that do more advanced things. But Calendar itself, if you get an iPhone or an iPad, every app that you need is there. You have Calendar. You have Mail. Yeah. You have a web browser and the all-important Stocks app. you have all of these apps that allow you to get started and do whatever you need to do. And if you become a more advanced user, or if you already are a more advanced user, then you can download more advanced apps and pay for those.
Yeah.
But I think Apple's strategy of making sure that you can do whatever you need to do right off the bat is a good one. It's a solid strategy.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And, you know, I've tried Sunrise and Fantastical.
Mm-hmm. And it's just a little bit difficult. I mean, that is absolutely the right way to go. Oddly enough, they can do some damage by making those built-in apps too good. There's a reason why Microsoft would ship an app called Notepad that it's a big deal that for a while that it could do boldface and italics instead of being a plain text editor, because once you start shipping like a really full featured mail client or a really, really full featured calendar app, you're kind of discouraging other developers from creating your own mail app. As we were just talking, the default app is going to be sticky in people's minds and sticky on people's desktops. That's going to be the thing that they're going to just go for mail. And if they're not aware that they can do better, for their particular needs, they might be able to do better than the stock iOS app, they're not going to go looking for an app. And then there's a problem of trying to charge them more than, you know, 89 cents for it. So it must be a balancing act. There must be a whole bunch of, I imagine there's a whole bunch of things on the whiteboard inside in Cupertino about stuff they would like to do, but they don't want to take, for their own purposes, for their own sanity, they don't want to devote the time and resources to adding a whole lot of next level features to a free stock product when they have so many resources that they can only so many resources for the entire project. And also part of their thinking must be that we can't just say there is no reason for anybody ever to buy a third party email app or calendar app because we're going to give you the best one that's available.
Let's take a break. Come back with more. Jim Dalrymple's here from The Loop, loopinsight.com. Andy Iannacco. Okay, maybe I spoke too soon. Andy? Jim was here.
I knocked him unconscious with my wisdom.
Jim, when do you have to take off, by the way? When do you have to take off, Jim?
1 o'clock.
Okay, we got half an hour. And then Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times and Renee Ritchie from the iMore folks. Our show today brought to you by lynda.com. I know you love to learn. You're a learner. Yeah, face it. Okay, don't deny it. You listen to these shows because you want to learn. You probably, you got a big brain. You probably read books even. But have you experienced lynda.com yet? This is like the place for learners. Over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you build your business, your technology, your creative skills. And what's great is when you join lynda.com, you pay one flat rate every month, or you can get a yearly plan. And by doing that, you don't have to declare a major. You get everything, all the courses. So you can just take a little bit here, a little bit there, take a full course somewhere else
They do have certificates so that you can prove, you know, that you've completed the course, things like that. I love it for, you know, my hobbies. I have a couple of hobbies. I like to code. They got great stuff on coding. Really amazing stuff on coding, including Swift. And I know a lot of you with the new announcement are very interested in Swift. And I like to take pictures. I love photography. And it's great for that, too. If you're interested in photography, they've got iPhone and iPad photography with iOS 9. That's a whole course. Oh, program. This is an awesome course. Todd Perkins, Programming for Non-Programmers with Swift on iOS 9. Creating cards, calendars, and books with photos for OS 10. Courses on performance tuning your Canon digital SLR. This is how granular they can get. Or Nikon D5500. But also larger, you know, subjects like the Photos Tools Weekly, which I love. The Burt Monroy's Pixel Playground. I know, you know what? I'm never going to be a Photoshop guy like Burt Monroy. I know it. But I still love, there's my buddy Ben Long looking sharp out there, learning to be a better photographer. But I love Pixel Playground. Bert, right now he's working on, this week is about, it's like a kiosk in New York City, how you can create an amazing, I mean, just, he makes photorealistic Photoshop paintings. And it, you learn techniques in Photoshop that just blow your mind. The DIY photographer, that's Joseph Lanashke, he does a great job too using, you know, stuff you have around the house, low-cost tricks and techniques to make your photography better. It's just, you know, it's you go there, and even if you have just a few minutes, if you're going to be in a plane, you can download the tutorials and watch them, including access to your to their stuff on Android or iOS. They have transcripts. It's just like it feels like you're going to college. It's just great. What is it? He's making a billboard here. I love this. So cool. Don't get me started. I won't watch. Lynda.com/MacBreak. Lynda.com/MacBreak. 10 days free so you can see everything that's there. You don't have to pick a subject. Just browse it all. LYNDA.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. You do a great job. Did you guys read this above Avalon Post? The Grand Unified Theory of Apple Products. He's basing it on a Tim Cook interview. No, I'm sorry, Phil Schiller interview with Stephen Levy that didn't get a lot of attention, but Schiller said something that kind of got Dan thinking. He says he took the opportunity to discuss a new way of thinking about the Apple product line, and I found it to be most revealing from a strategic perspective. Instead of describing how each product has a new, unique role in our lives, which most companies do, you know, here's how you would use it, or simply placing Apple's entire product category on the same spectrum with an Apple Watch here all the way to the iMac there, Schiller gave each product a job. Make consumers, this is really interesting, I'm curious what you think, make consumers feel like they don't need a larger, more powerful Apple device in their life. So the job of the Apple Watch, to do more and more things on your wrist so you don't need to use your phone as often. The job of the phone, to do more and more things so that maybe you don't need your iPad. The job of the iPad, to be so powerful and capable you never need a notebook. The job of the notebook, to make it so you never need a desktop. And what's the job of the desktop? Its job is to challenge what we think a computer can do, the iMac in particular. Notice he doesn't mention the Mac Pro.
Yeah, they seem to be saying that there's nothing above the Mac Pro, so there's no reason to ever buy a Mac Pro.
Never buy a Mac Pro. The job of the iMac is to challenge what we think a computer can do. And by the way, I think it does this really well. And do things no computer's ever done before, be more and more powerful and capable so that we need a desktop. We need a desktop because of its capabilities. Because if all it's doing is competing with the notebook and being thinner and lighter, then it doesn't need to exist. What do you think? This is an interesting way to think about Apple's product line.
Yeah, it's sort of that thing. I forget when we talked about it. I think maybe we talked about it when the watch first came out, where like my father bought an Apple II Plus so he wouldn't have to drive downtown and use an IBM mainframe. And then I got an iPhone so I wouldn't have to stick to my Mac all the time and I could go off and do other interesting things. And then you get an Apple Watch so you don't have to pull your iPhone out of the pocket. And each one can't do as much as the one that came before, but it can do certain frequent, brief, important tasks better than the thing that came before. And that gives them sort of that important role, why you'd be willing to add something else to our portfolio. And over time, they get more and more capable. And now on an iPhone or an iPad, you can do many more Mac-y things. But at the same time, the Mac gets more and more powerful, so you can do things that you never could do before. I think that's sort of like the beneficial cycle that Apple gets from their integrated approach. It is really a device spectrum and not a set of unique products that sort of self-compete for their own businesses.
I think forever we've been talking about like the, you know, George Carlin place for the routine, the my place for my stuff, about how the house is just a big pile of your stuff with a cover on it, and then you go to travel to Hawaii, so you got to make a smaller version of your stuff. Then you get to the hotel, and your friend in Maui says, "Hey, Elizabeth, why don't you stay with me?" Like, no, you got to make an even smaller version of your stuff. and it's always been sort of like that. I think I don't disagree with what he's saying. I think it's a little bit more subtle than that. I think it's more like they understand that there's so many their audience is so big now, and their needs are so unpredictable that it's not in their best interest to say that here's your default Mac, which is the MacBook Pro. And if you want something that's really, really light, get yourself a MacBook Air. And if you just need just a mobile apps, just get an iPad. Really, it's best for them to say, here's what we sell, and we're going to sell a lot of different things. We're going to sell 3 different sizes of iPads, 4 if you include the iPhone Plus. If you look at all these 4, decide which one of them really speaks to you, that seems to be, this is exactly what I need and what I want, great, because you're exactly who we designed it for. You're brilliant because we had exactly the uses that you have in mind for you. And of course, that's going to be different for every person. I mean, with the iPad Pro, I appreciate so many people who, when I've been tweeting pictures every now and then of, you know, I've got my Kensington, my Logitech keyboard, my little stand, and my iPad Pro. Absolutely love it. I was riding on the train back and forth yesterday. Lots of people saying that, well, it seems like it would be simpler just to have a MacBook. And it's, well, no, I've been able to buy 13-inch MacBook Airs for several years now, but none of them spoke to me as a solution to any problem that I had, whereas the iPad Pro is a very specific solution to a specific problem that I had. And I think that's the sort of stuff we're looking at. Instead of making that grid of we have mobile, we have desktop, we have professional, we have, you know, instead of that 2x2 grid they used to do, it's going to be, here is a constellation of stuff. We're going to not make more stuff than we can really produce and sell, but we're going to try to make more than a few things. And we're going to basically let people come in, try things on, and decide which one works for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a change. In fact, he points out that over the last 4 years, Apple has doubled its product line from 12 models to more than 24. And when you're talking SKUs, of course, because of all the finishes and so forth, it's considerably more than that. And that is a departure for Apple. But Apple has incredibly improved its production lines, its abilities to create this stuff.
You have to add addressable markets if you want to grow.
Yeah, I guess, huh? Yeah. All right. It's a worth reading, aboveavalon.com, if you want to.
The artist formerly known as Sammy the Walrus.
is that who it is?
Yeah, it's Neil Seibert. He was known as Sammy the Walrus on Twitter for a long time.
Okay.
He was an anonymous Wall Street insider, and then he came out and did this site, which is terrific.
Sammy the Walrus. This is what he thinks, Neil Seibert.
We all need names like that.
Yeah. Jimmy the Beard, Sammy the Walrus.
Jimmy the Beard.
Only if you get to choose it yourself. Don't let any of the people.
I did notice that I ordered my mom an iPad Pro because she's an artist and I wanted to get the pencil. It's not going to come till January 15th. They're still having a hard time with this.
It was a stack at Best Buy and I grabbed an additional one.
I know. I saw three old ones at the Apple store. I should have bought one extra. Maybe I'll send her mine until she gets it.
I think that's the nicest thing you can possibly do. If I ever see an Apple Pencil available for sale anywhere, I will buy it. Not even just for myself, because I know for a fact that I can find at least 17 people that would love to take it off
it's
my
so
hands.
Strange. Why are they
form of currency?
They're putting them in the stores, but they're back ordering them like crazy.
Yeah, it's separate. It's separate supplies. You always want to make sure that people aren't disappointed. So they set aside some for online delivery and some for retail, so that people who go to stores aren't just told to go and order it,
and then you'll never get it. By the way, we never really decided: is Apple going to announce? I never heard a yep or a nope. Is Apple going to announce a new watch in March?
It's so new and exciting, Leo. There's no product cycle for watch yet. It's a brand new thing.
We just don't know.
They do it yearly, and even the iPads now, they're playing with it. Like the iPad Air didn't get updated this fall. It's going to take longer than a year.
I was convinced it'd be 2 years before they do a new watch. I really was.
I think that all depends on what the original plan was for the watch. I mean, we know that they're always, 3 to 5 years ahead. So they could have already been there and known
right. And not knowing what the product cycle is, but guessing that it would be a yearly product.
iPad 2 was transformatively better, and so was the iPhone 3G, right. So it's interesting.
But if you paid $17,000 for a gold watch, you're not going to be happy.
You won't care, because like you're buying it because it's the gold. You're not buying it to have the latest and greatest technology. You're buying it because $17,000 is the same thing that you pay for your Singapore Airlines flight to Tokyo,
right,
and you're going
to
buy that over and over again.
Because you like to have a shower on your plane.
Do we pay our employees a living wage, or do I have a gold gadget watch on my wrist?
I need a new one, Mumsy.
Really, because I got to talk to someone who had it, and it really is a different world. Their airline tickets cost tens of thousands of dollars. They buy the $20,000 dress, and it only gets worn once. The 5-star hotel room costs more than I think I've paid for the plane tickets. It's a completely different world. It's not ours.
And, I got the stainless steel. I didn't get the sport one. But, of course, if they announce one in March, I'll get a new one. And I mean, not even sold on the watch. So
I think I was with Jim at the watch launch in Palo Alto. And there was a whole group of people who all looked like retired semiconductor people trying to figure out which gold watch they were buying. That they were buying the gold one. And Jim and I were just looking at them and then thinking.
And I'm trying to figure out which sport model I'm going to get,
Can I afford to get the Villainies loop in addition to the free band? Or am I going to just be calculating how many words I have to write until I've eaten the cost of this?
I was also trying to figure out how I was going to smash the display glass and run out with it because, even the sport one.
They thought that when you walked in.
Well, I think that Apple's devices are very well priced myself because what you get is so useful and it lasts so long.
Okay. It's a unique perspective.
Apparently, the Dubai store opening.
I don't mind paying up for quality.
I didn't mind paying for the MacBook. I felt like, although that's pricey for what you're getting, I'm going to get $1,400 value out of it. Yeah.
I do think that the Apple Watch Edition is probably the most embarrassing thing that Apple's ever made. But when you look at, for instance, the Sport Edition and the Apple Watch Edition, the Apple Watch Nothing, and you compare it to pretty much every other maker on the market that's not a Tag, please, of course, correct me on the pronounce, the Tag Heuer, Tag Heuer, whatever, however you pronounce it. I mean,
hearing you attempt to pronounce it. Don't help him.
The only thing I can remember is that no matter how I pronounce it, someone corrects me because, again, I do not live in the world of $1,500 watches.
But,
I love my Moto 360. This is the one that I actually purchased for myself. I had a review unit, but I had to buy one of my own. It's a nicely made watch, but you compare this to even the Apple Watch Sport Edition and you feel as though Sport Edition is better constructed. You feel as though if something's going to last me 5 years, it's certainly going to be the Sport Edition and not this. If something's going to have, if I don't actually be active with it and therefore don't scratch it up, could I sell this to somebody in 2 or 3 years? Certainly for the Apple Sport Edition, maybe not for this. When you look at the forums,
Did I misunderstand? You didn't buy the Tag Heuer.
Okay. No, this was like $200.
That's the Moto 360.
Moto 360.
Like that one.
I'm looking forward to looking at the Huawei Android Wear watch, which is real stainless steel. But it just bothers me that I wish that the affordable model were more affordable, and it also just doesn't make any sense when I look at the accessory bands. I'm like, I do not see this stainless steel band costing $500 of anybody's money. I do not. I see their $150 leather strap and I see that's a nice strap. If I got that free with a watch, I'd say, wow, they really gave me a nice free band. I would not spend $150 on it. It doesn't look like a $150 band. It doesn't look as good as the band that I got on last year's Moto 360 for free.
The Tag Heuer is sold out for like months.
Yeah, but they're making like 2,000, 3,000 a month. They're not like making millions of them.
Somebody wants them. I would,
I mean, that's not
cheaper than an gold Apple Watch.
Particularly because you're selling them specifically to Tag owners. You're selling them specifically to luxury watch
the
Tag.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Apple's never going to release the figures, but I'd love to see if they're selling 2,000 or 3,000 gold watches every quarter, let's say. Or whether that's just whether it turned out to be just pretty much a promotional thing.
Apparently, the Dubai store opening was a fairly large set of gold watches.
Oh,
sold.
I bet they did.
You'd expect that.
They probably sold 2,000 right there. Hey, good news! Swift is open source. Kind of alluded to that earlier in the Lynda.com ad. Apple making good its promise that it would be an open source computing system. And already people have ported it to Linux from the GitHub repository. And IBM, I love this, has created the Swift Sandbox, which is an online service for free that you can go to, write Swift code, compile and run it. It's not quite the playground. In fact, the playground's not available in the open source version of Swift.
Can you REPL it?
It's basically a REPL. Because you can run code directly. So here, I'll do the hello world, which maybe it doesn't. I can't get back to that. But I loaded it up. When you first load it up, it loads hello world, which is just a couple of lines of code. And you click the run button, and you can see the output immediately, which is very cool.
It's an Apache license, too, which is fairly permissive.
Yeah, that's a good license.
Yep.
No problem with the Apache license. I hope more people take it. Somebody just said 9.2 is out. Is that right?
Yep. 9.2, yep, WatchOS 2.1.
Oh, crap.
OS 10, TVOS, 10.11.2.
Everything dropped like about a half hour.
TVOS 9.1.
I was typing in updates to the show notes like 5 minutes after 2 o'clock and trying to figure out.
What's your thoughts on this? Should we do it? Is it safe?
I don't know if it's safe, but they've added a whole bunch of stuff that people have been expecting for a long, long time. Like on tvOS, now, for instance, the remote apps work fine. So now you can control it from your iPhone. For people who are frustrated with how difficult it is to keep typing in passwords, you can. There's no Bluetooth support for keyboards, but you can use the on-screen keyboard now in the remote app, of course, because now the remote app is compatible. They added stuff like you can Siri voice search for music on TV and on the TV is now enabled. On iOS, one of the nicest things I've been waiting for a long time for Apple Music is they now, if there is a song or a track or playlist that is on your device, you get a little phone icon with a checkbox next to that list item to tell you visually this song is actually on your device. It's not streaming from the cloud.
Thank God.
So if you board a plane with it, you are not going to be
listening nice.
In air entertainment channel three. It's easier to add to create playlists. A lot of really nice little refinements, and most of them are of the how come you didn't ship with this? It's very, very welcome improvement.
How big is it?
I didn't mind during the show. It turned out fine. I had no problems with it.
It seems like it's coming very fast, and it's not very big. Because I already downloaded it.
It took about a few minutes over Wi-Fi for me.
Yeah, but I think I wish I could find the size. I don't think they say it. Usually I can find that somewhere.
It shows it usually on the first screen.
It's not right now. But I don't think it's like a gigabyte.
Apple should be embarrassed about music.
Mm. Yeah.
272 megabytes.
272 megabytes is tiny.
Yeah.
So it's a vector. It's a delta.
Delta, yeah. Yeah.
Watch OS, what's new there?
Bug fixes and language support, particularly for languages that don't go from left to right. They've also added Siri support for, again, languages that aren't Western languages. So a lot of Arabic languages, a lot of... I'm looking for the list in front of me, but a lot of international support, a lot of bug fixes. I can't remember if it has actual features that people who in America who use the English stuff would actually use.
I can't remember Apple ever updating every product that they have at the same time.
Somebody wants to go home for Christmas or for the holidays early. They do close everything down for the holidays.
But it's December. They should stop. Something Jim said actually triggered, like Jim was just talking about Apple Music for a second, and it occurs to me there's this theme going around because Jim is a power Apple Music user and it's been horrible for him. I just use Siri to play stuff and it's been fantastic for me. People who have big collections of media on Drobos or other devices, they're really upset with Apple TV because it stops some forms of MP4 from working and the home app is still, like the computer's app is still a mess and they really can't access their collections. But I just use it to stream stuff, so I'm fine. Brent Simmons just did a post about his father's ongoing issues with Mail, and he's a super intelligent guy, and Mail just won't work. John Gruber and Matt Durance were talking about how things just won't sync. Like you put in a text shortcut, and it just doesn't sync. And we've gotten past this time where things either work or they don't work. But like the more you use a product, it looks like the more pain you're getting from that product.
Yeah. Well, as long as they're updating it.
My music doesn't sync between my Mac and my iOS device. I mean, Apple Music today updated the fact that you could download and make available offline your music. We're 5 months in, and they're just getting around to this now.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, I went on a trip. I downloaded all of my Guns N' Roses for a short flight, and I get on the plane, hit airplane mode. 8 songs out of 100 actually downloaded. So Apple is finally getting to this now. So when I get to where I was going, in order to make sure that I had music for the flight home, I downloaded Google Play, subscribed, downloaded my music, and it worked flawlessly. Now, you look at Apple TV. They updated Apple TV today. I haven't tried this yet, but when Apple TV first came out, I went to Apple Music and added a song. Sure, okay, you can add a song, no problem. Then I went to that album, and it looks like I have the whole album, added to my music. When I don't, I only have one song. So I go to remove that album or that song, you know, when you press the button, and it comes up with this screen and says, remove from my library. I press that button 100 times and nothing happens. So then I go to cancel and the song is there. It's like Apple wants me to have this song. No, I don't want that song. So now I'm going to go out as soon as we're done here and try that and see if that bug is fixed. But there's so many bugs. Many bugs.
Well, and they're different for different people. So it's very hard to predict what's going to happen.
And the last time Apple had this many bugs in an app, they wrote an apology letter, and that was with Maps.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what they're doing here. I mean, I added Led Zeppelin 1 and Led Zeppelin 2 to Apple Music on my Mac. It changed the names of them to Led Zeppelin Mothership, both of them, both albums, even though they're different albums.
Oh.
But on my iOS devices, they were still Led Zeppelin 1 and 2.
What?
I thought that my account synced. I thought that the Mac and iOS
talk to each other.
They're the same. Yeah. Apparently they don't.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very angry with Apple Music just because I care so much about my music and I care. I believe in Apple. I believe that what they do is I think that they do great things. They innovate. What they've done with Apple Music is not innovation. They're playing catch up and they're not even doing it right.
I'm guessing the fact that they've increased the match limit on Apple iTunes Match to 100,000 tracks is not going to change your.
I don't care about. I want them to fix the problems.
Yeah, make it work.
And
I want them to stick 100 tracks right.
Yeah.
Get 10 tracks right. I mean, we're 5 months into this, and I can't even add music to the library. And keep in mind that I'm not asking Apple Music to do anything that Apple didn't tell me it could do. Right. I'm not saying that Apple should do this great, wonderful thing that it can't do. They told me it could do this. I'm just asking it to do it, and it can't.
Yeah, and it seems symptomatic of a larger sync problem. I have text replacement shortcuts on my iPhone, on my Mac. They're mostly the same. I just installed my iPad Pro. I look and the text replacements are empty. And there's no button that says resync them. There's no, like sometimes if you go to iCloud and you re-authenticate, it'll re-kick all the sync services, but not always. And I don't know how to do it otherwise. So there's the big joke is that Apple's never been good at cloud services, but at a certain point, it can't be a joke anymore. It has to be something that they're deadly serious on a cultural level with fixing, and things that you're not good at culturally are super hard to fix.
It feels as though when Apple built iCloud, they used like inferior counterfeit Chinese steel. And because the entire thing has been built from this thing, it means that they can't ever fix it without tearing it down and starting all over again.
Well, do it.
Then tear it down. Tear it down.
Yeah. No, they had to,
Mr. Cook, tear this music down.
I would be very, very pleased if Apple did that. They simply said that we appreciate we've got a very serious problem here. Yeah. We are going to pull back for a second and restart. We're going to Apple Music is still going on. It's going to work great. But please realize that we are capable of saying that we bought a load of tainted meat. Please don't buy the beef burritos anymore because those are tainted products. We will have non-tainted products out on the shelves soon enough, and we're not hearing that from Apple yet.
See, right. All I ask is that they do what they said that they could do. And, you know, they're just not. And, you know, every once in a while we see an update. I have no idea if this update that comes out today actually fixes anything or it doesn't. I mean, the last time they released updates for Apple Music, it, well, I guess some of them did get fixed. Some of the bugs did get fixed. But, you know, the bugs just continue. And I believe in what Apple says. I believe in what Tim Cook says. And as a company, I believe that what they do is great. And that's what upsets me about Apple Music, that it's not great. It's not even mediocre. You know? Yeah. That's what upsets me.
It's amazing to think that there's a critical piece of Apple infrastructure. There's an app that is so important to Apple that it comes pre-installed in the dock of every iOS device. And it's an app that as a consumer, I think whatever you do, you have a brand new iPad Pro and it's great, but whatever you do, don't introduce it to music. The first, I download the Amazon MP3 app. It's a little bit, it has the right idea, kind of the same way that Google Music has, where I like the idea that it almost decides, it's almost designed to be two different music players under the same icon, and an on-device music player and a streaming music player. And it's always absolutely explicit to you and to itself about what it means to do at any one given moment. And I have never surprised myself by not having something on that device that I thought was going to be on that device.
RDO passing away, what would be your choice then as a replacement? I take it not Apple Music. it's sad because it's a great opportunity to snarf up a bunch of RDO users.
I think the choice is already there. I mean, Pandora has their intellectual property, and Pandora is basically going to turn themselves from a radio only and on demand.
Wait till they do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Pandora's radio service is the best on the market, better than Spotify, much better than Apple Music.
Have you tried the Google, now that Songza has been absorbed by Google, have you tried the Google stuff? Because you have. Yeah.
Yeah. I downloaded the app to make sure I have music for the way home,
right.
you know, and the Google app is great.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of stuff that bothers me. I should not have to go to another service just to download my own music. I shouldn't have to do that.
Well, this is what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, which is, it seems like now in order for everything to work, you have to choose a side. But once you've chosen a side, you don't have that option.
Right.
You know, you're kind of all in or nothing. And I think it's a lot to ask of a company to have expertise in every area.
Again,
but if that's what they're promising,
then exactly. Then don't tell me that you can do it.
Right.
If they had to come out and said, "Look, we're going to try this. We're not really sure if we can do it or not.
Beta label on it.
Here's a beta, and let's see how this goes." Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. You know, no problem at all. Let's try this beta. That's not what they said.
I'm a fan of Google Play at this point, especially because of the YouTube Red that comes along for the ride. Ad-free versions of YouTube, the YouTube Music. They have a good collection. I like their software.
My biggest concern is that the independent companies won't be able to survive the razor-thin,
really hard
business. And it's going to be Google and Apple.
It's going to be Google, Apple, Amazon. Microsoft, and Amazon. And maybe not Microsoft, only because they don't care. I think it's tough even for Pandora because the record companies squeeze them and can squeeze them as hard as they want. I like Spotify a lot. I would be sad if Spotify could not make a living. But
Spotify
is the biggest at this point.
Yeah, they're the guys.
But they have no other money to help them defray costs of crazy music.
Exactly. We ask Michael Roberts, the founder of MP3.com, what the music industry is willing to do. Let's take a little break. We want to get Jim out of here in a timely fashion. Our show today brought to you by Braintree. Braintree, it makes payments easy. They have licked it. They started originally as a web e-commerce solution, moved to mobile very early on, and now they are the number one for mobile payments. They make mobile payments fast, easy, seamless. It's almost magical. In fact, you know because you've used it. What? You say, Leo, I don't remember using Braintree. Oh, yes, you did. Have you ever used an Uber? Yeah. That payment system, you know, you get out of the car and everything's handled. That's Braintree. Lyft, same thing. Airbnb, ever paid for anything there? Yep, same thing.
Hotels Tonight, Braintree. GitHub is Braintree. Now, if you're a developer and you've not used GitHub, well, I don't know. I'm presuming that somewhere you've used Braintree. How about Pinterest's Buyable Pins? That's Braintree. What's great about Braintree is they make it easy for the people using your app to give you money. Now, that's what you want. You don't want them to, you want them to be comfortable. They want it to be the experience to be transparent. And you want your customers to be able to use any form of payment they want. Apple Pay, Android Pay, PayPal, Venmo, credit cards, Bitcoin. Yes, Bitcoin. And if some other way to pay comes along, Braintree will support that too. For you, fast payouts, continuous support, superior fraud protection. You'll see fewer abandoned carts, more sales with Braintree. Best in class mobile checkout experience. And it scales right along with you from your first dollar to your billionth. It's a full stack payment solution. Easy integration for you. Cross-platform in every way. It's the best. Go try it. They have a sandbox. BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. And as a little incentive, your first $50,000 in transactions will be fee-free as long as you go to BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. Picks of the week. Let's start with you, Jim Dalrymple.
Okay. I am going to pick this week Stone Temple Pilots.
Oh, yes, of course. We have to.
Because Scott Whelan died this week, last week.
Sad story. I'm sure you read the Rolling Stone letter from his ex.
Yeah, it's so sad. I love Scott. I think he's an incredible talent, was an incredible talent. So Stone Temple Pilots, Velvet Revolver, and... Scott's,
you know, it's interesting because he was always reinventing himself. That's the era you think represents him best.
But I mean, he was so talented as a songwriter.
I know.
And no matter who he was with, I mean, with Pilots, they, you know, STP had some amazing songs over the years. But then, you know, in two albums with Velvet Revolver, it just amazing stuff. So. If you haven't heard either of those, of course, Velvet Revolver is with Slash. If you haven't heard any of those, please go listen. He was great. There's also a couple of concerts on Quello, which is on Apple TV. One with Stone Temple Pilots, one with Velvet Revolver. Some just great concerts. The way that man could move on stage was, yeah, I mean, he was so skinny, you know, but yeah. he'd be moving around up there and it was great. It was kind of like Axl Rose in the old days, you know, the way that Axl would move, but before he got fat with cornrows. So, yeah.
It's sad to say Scott didn't get a chance to get fat.
Scott didn't. Yeah.
Good pick. I like it. Scott Weiland, any of the eras, but supergroup era was, I have to say, interesting. Great music. And you've heard all of his. You've actually heard a lot of it on the radio, even though he didn't have a huge number of hits. Radio played a lot of STP.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim. We'll let you go. We made it. 1 minute to spare.
Thank you.
Loopinsight.com. Do not fear this beard. Thank you, Jim. We'll see you soon.
Happy holidays, Jim.
Happy holidays, yeah.
Yeah. Hope to see you before the holidays, though.
Are you going somewhere for Christmas?
No.
Nope. Staying home? No.
Yeah.
It's warm there. Why is he going to move?
Yeah, stay right where you are. All right, Jim. Take care.
See you guys.
Renee Ritchie, iMore.com, your pick of the week.
So I'm picking, it's something that is both old and new. It's Apple's Lightning to SD card reader. And the big deal here is with iOS 9.2 on the iPhone, it also works with the iPhone now.
Finally.
So finally, with like marquee and blink tags on either side of it.
Yeah.
It originally launched with the iPad, and it was a great way when you were on the go to take out the SD card from your traditional camera, stick it in, I'm calling an SD card traditional. This is how far we've come from your regular camera. Put it in there and just suck everything into your iPad. You could edit it on the go. But now the iPhones are so powerful and they've got such good software on them that a lot of people have really wanted to be able to import photos into the iPhone and use that instead because it's one less thing to carry around. And now you can do it just as easily. You buy the adapter. I believe the adapter is physically the same. So if you have the original one, you should be able to just update to iOS 9.2 and start using it. And you put it in there, pull movies off, pull photos off, bring them into your iPhone, use them in iMovie, process them in Photos or Google's Photos or everyone who's got Photos as the same name of their product now. And it just, it's incredibly convenient, especially on an iPhone 6S Plus that is such so powerful a chipset and so much screen space. It's just, for me, it makes mobile much, much more fun. Super happy with it.
I'm glad it works again. I was always puzzled. It works on the iPad, too? Because I've had trouble with it.
It's always worked on the iPad. At least for me, it's always worked on the iPhone. And it's always been marked as compatible with the iPad. Okay. And it works great. I think Serenity was doing all her editing on the iPad Pro with it.
I know. I want it for the iPad Pro. By the way, the new one is supposedly, if you use it with the iPad Pro, you're going to get USB 3 speeds, which is cool.
The iPad Pro. So the biggest problem with USB speeds on the iPhone, on iOS devices traditionally, is that they didn't have PCI architecture and they didn't have NAND flash memory that could write at anything approaching USB 3 speeds. So it didn't really matter how fast the cable was. It just sort of mattered how fast they could do I/O, and they couldn't do it fast. So there's no point. Now they've got this whole new storage controller, which is very similar to a MacBook controller. Super, super fast. And they got PCI architecture, so it makes you start to wonder, could they even get like Thunderbolt speeds out of it if they wanted to eventually? But yeah, for sure, all they need now is the Lightning cable is still USB 2. So we need a physical Lightning cable that's USB 3, and we should be very, very happy.
But they do make an SD card reader now that gives you that full speed. So pick when you get, I might get a new one, in other words. It's worth getting a new one.
Yep. And it says right in the description, it supports data transfer up to USB 3 speeds on iPad Pro, up to USB 2 speeds on everything
else.
Otherwise, I suspect the new iPhones could be driven faster. We'll have to find out.
Mr. Andy Nocco, your pick of the week.
Quick reminder that Monument Valley, that wonderful, wonderful game that everyone was talking about earlier this year, is free for iOS, but it stops being free at midnight tonight. So if you're listening live, definitely go snag yourself a free copy because it's a great, great game.
Really good.
But my other pick is another old but new again. It's Notability for the iPad, which has been around for the iPad for a long, long, long time. I've just never really liked it because there's never been a good thing for my hand to take notes in. The way I take notes is by, you know, it's a really fast conduit between my brain and my hand. And if I'm waiting for, if there's a lag between the pencil and the pen and the screen, or if things are not working the way, and I'm manipulating an object instead of just doing a free flow of ideas. But the pencil is so fast that, as a matter of fact, the last thing I did before writing my iPad review was actually write out.
Look at that.
I had so many ideas, and was the first draft was breaking down into about $5,000-$7,000 words, and I knew that was way too long for what I wanted to do. And the only way to simplify it was to put the draft aside, get out, use the analog portion of my brain, and then just remember what I wanted to say, write it out like that. And the great thing about taking notes is that, like you can see, it's not all like bullet item text. Sometimes you remember writing something later on, as you remember something earlier. And sometimes there are different ways of describing things. And you're also taking notes on a sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper. Yes. And so it was just, I solved all those editing problems like in about 15 minutes of just writing two pages of notes on what I want to say and how I want to say it. It really is remarkable. I've been using it a lot over the past week just for that reason. And it's just a good indication, a good demonstration of here's what happens when you take an existing app. You don't have to – it's updated, of course, for iOS 9. It's not as though it's the old app. But when you just put it in a larger form factor and add a pencil to it, for some people it just becomes a transformative new app. Absolutely lovely. And it's not just for handwritten notes. It can also, as you're in a meeting, it can record all the people, all the noise in the room while you're taking notes, so that you will have like a full recording of what people are talking about, plus the notes that you were taking. You can export stuff. You can import color. You can import pictures. You can have photos in this notebook. As I say, the notes app for that Apple ships is good. Evernote is really, really good. This is the app that really tries to be a sheet of paper that you put ink on. And it's the most successful of all the ones that I tried. So best $6 I spent.
Good. Yeah, I own it, but I'm just downloading it now again. Does OmniGraffle support the pencil? What other kind of design and note and mind? I would love a mind mapping app that supported the pencil.
I haven't tried them yet. I'd be surprised if it didn't. The Omni Outliner, for instance, has the most ambitious keyboard support I've seen in an iOS app, and it flies in the iPad Pro. So if it doesn't do pencil. I'd be really surprised. They'll be coming supporting it soon, I know.
Yeah. Love Notability. Hey, we're out of time. This was fun. And I'm updating all of my hardware, so I can't really show you anything. I was going to, and maybe I will, I was going to mention, I've because this is such a narrow market, but Chris Marquardt has talked me into buying a film camera. In fact, I bought such an old film camera. It's as old as me. I bought a film camera my age, the Leica M3, and it has no light meter on it. But here's the good news. Your iPhone does. This is Pocket Light Meter. Chris Marquardt recommended it. Has a spot. It's a spot meter. You can buy a little add-on for a couple of bucks. It'll go give you a dome over there. It'll make it a more diffused area meter. You could pick the ISO of the film you're using. Let's say I'm doing ISO 100. And then you can lock down the shutter speed. Like, I don't want to ever go slower than a 30th. So if I'm taking a picture here, I need to set the aperture to f2.8. It's that easy. You can also log it, which is fantastic, out to Evernote. So you can have the picture that you took. This is great. I'm going to use this because my film camera won't really have EXIF information in the film about where I took the picture or any notes that I want, but I could put that into my smartphone as I do the meter reading, and then I can add it and have a record, a log of where I've taken the photos and so forth. So this is pretty sweet. It isn't, it's free, but if you wanted to buy the developer a pint of beer, $5.99, no ads then. And, I think it's probably worth spending a little bit of money on it. So it's Pocket Light Meter. There's a lot of different ones. Look for the one with the icon that looks like an old school spot, you know, light meter, incident light meter. Nice little pick there. All right. Andy Anako, Chicago Sun-Times. Read him and enjoy him. CWOB.com. Love him. Send him money.
We all need
to tweet at him, whatever it is.
Money. No, love or money. Definitely money.
Right. If you have a choice between love and money, pick the money.
Which people can love him too.
Send him a gold watch. Mr. Rene Ritchie, he's at imore.com, and of course a great place to go to keep up with Apple News, but also the bestest tutorials and information, his 10,000 word review of the iPad Pro and more. Thank you, Rene. Great to see you again. Continued warm weather.
Thank you.
In Montreal. I hope you have a great spring. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC at twit.tv. If you watch, join the chat room, irc.twit.tv. That's always a lot of fun having that interaction going on. If you can't be here in person, though, you can always get on-demand audio and video, either one, at twit.tv/mbw, or go watch it on youtube.com/MacBreakWeekly, or subscribe in iTunes or Overcast or Stitcher, or use the TV apps. There's four of them now on Apple TV. Thank you to our independent developers, Roku. Thank you, Houdini7, all of those great apps. That way you never miss an episode. But now I'm sad to say, you know, Security Now coming up next. But you have to go back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.